Ring of Honor is returning to the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City on Saturday night. They've got plenty of more festivities coming up. The 15th anniversary show Friday, March 15th, live on pay-per-view. And then the Supercard of Honor Saturday, April 1st in Lakeland. Frankie Kazarian joining me here, who will face his former partner, Christopher Daniels, on that show come April. So thanks for the time, Frankie. It's been a long time since we've caught up.
Thanks for having me, man. It has been a long time, but happy to do it.
So, bigger swerve, you joining the Bullet Club or the end of the Oscars on Sunday night?
Well, I don't think anybody saw either coming. I'll say the Oscar one was bigger just because it probably had a bit larger of an audience. I don't know if we have millions of people watching us quite yet, but both were screaming of a M. Night Shyamalan twist at the end. And I don't think people saw anything coming, saw either one coming. So when you can surprise people, especially in 2017, I guess that's a good thing. Though, I mean, mine was calculated. I believe that Oscar one was just a complete and simple botch, as we would say in the industry. So,
you don't think Warren Beatty was in on it?
If he was, he jobbed himself out because he was made to look a fool. But at least he owned up and said what happened. Faye Dunaway, I don't know what happened to her. I don't recall if she was still there or if she just darted and was gone. But he at least had the balls to stand up there and say what happened. But
he set her up,
that
though.
What a schmoz that was.
He set her up because he's the one that was like, okay, I don't see the name on here. And then he like handed it over to her and she said the name. He totally set her up. Like, all right, you take the heat here.
Yeah, you could see him whisper right after she announced it. You could see him whisper to her. He says something along the lines of, it said Emma Stone for best actress. So, I mean, I don't know. It's live TV. What do you do? Do you stop production and yell at one of the stagehands and go, this is the wrong card? I mean, what do you do? That's, who knows? But, you know, it gave us something to talk about.
Yeah.
I'm not big on award shows, but I did watch that part of it. Hey, give everybody something to talk about. You know, we love talking about other people nowadays. So,
so how exactly did it come about where you and Christopher Daniels, your longtime partnership is now over and you joined the Bullet Club?
Well, I mean, I've said this before, you know, wrestling is a very selfish business. And one thing that that I've never been is a selfish person. And perhaps my wrestling career, that's maybe hindered me a little bit because you have to be very, very self-serving and very cutthroat. And, you know, it was time that I do something for me. You know, the way I looked at it is Chris Daniels, you know, was looking to do something for him. He's looking to win a world title and he has every right to do that, but I'm not going to be put on the back burner. And, it's time for me to make a decision and do something.
Were you surprised that opportunity came up for you joining the Bullet Club?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Were you surprised about the opportunity coming up for you to join Bullet Club?
I don't know if anything really surprises me these days. I, you know, thought it was an outstanding opportunity for me, especially going forward as a singles wrestler. And given the popularity of the Bullet Club and the clout they have and the relevance of the guys in it. I don't want to say maybe pleasantly surprised, but not necessarily surprised. You know, I see it as an opportunity like every other opportunity, and I seized it.
So when it comes to Bullet Club, because they have such a big presence in Japan, do you see yourself going over there?
It's entirely possible. It's entirely possible to get back to New Japan this time in a singles role. You know, wherever I'm needed, I'm going to go there. Again, it's all just opportunities for me at this point. And I take advantage of everyone I have because in this business, they don't come often. So, you know, you gotta grab them while they're there.
Obviously you've had a big part of your career has been as a singles competitor, but you know, more lately it's been, you know, tagging up with Chris. What do you think it's going to be like that next time you go down the ring and, you're not teammates anymore and you're going out there by yourself?
Well, I mean, we've had, you know, since we've got to Ring of Honor, we've, you know, of course, 90% of our matches have been tag team matches. We've had a few singles matches sprinkled in here and there, and neither of us are any strangers to singles wrestling. It's just a renewed focus now on it. You know, you kind of get in a zone and a rhythm as a tag team wrestler, and tag team wrestling is a different beast. So then, you know, you have to shift your focus and your moveset and your attitude, and you know, you're out there, you don't have your partner to tag in or rely on, And it's, you know, you're getting thrown to the wolves. And it's, again, going back to opportunities, challenges, a way for me to reinvent myself and a way for me to show that, you know, in addition to being part of a great tag team, I'm also still a great singles wrestler.
You know, when watching you guys team up together, especially in Ring of Honor and even before that in other places, the two of you had such great chemistry. I know you guys are longtime friends, but, you know, the chemistry in the ring, and also it seemed like a lot of fun for you guys. Yeah, is it fair to say that this period of teaming up with Chris has been the most fun you've had in wrestling?
It was a great ride. It was definitely the funnest 6 years period of my career. Because we, you know, one thing I will say about Chris, and I'll always give him his credit, he loves this business and he is, you know, 24/7 thinking of how to improve on the microphone, in the ring, his persona, everything. And I'm like that too. So, you know, it was really easy for us to just feed off of each other. And of course, in the ring, having wrestled against each other hundreds of times before we became partners, our chemistry was just, you know, we were locked in from the first match on. So it was great. And, you know, I think everywhere we performed, we exceeded expectations. We, you know, we weren't even supposed to be a team. As long as we have been, you know, we were fighting that battle since day one, and, you know, we overcame all those obstacles and we became a very successful team, which is difficult to do. I think, you know, in hindsight, when you take two guys who had substantial singles runs and then, you know, put them together and then they have a substantial tag team run, you know, the addiction, bad influence, whatever you want to call us. You know, we really carved out a niche as tag team wrestlers. And I think when it's all said and done, people will definitely remember our team.
What do you think that is, especially now? Because it seems like there's so much of a, I wouldn't say a fight necessarily, but, you know, there's always this pull when it comes to, can we put together a tag team and then can we keep them together for a long period of time? Can they go well? A lot of times when you put together a team, there's some people or other forces are always talking about when's that time going to come when they break up. But for the two of you guys to come together, it seemed like it was something that was natural. It's something that you guys wanted, that you enjoyed, and you were successful at.
Well, that was just it. You know, we saw a void in the tag team division where we were at the time, and we both kind of had nothing going on as singles competitors. So we decided to fill that void because we knew the team would work. Sometimes you just have instincts and you know. You know, not to sound braggadocious, but looking at the landscape of where we were at the time, you know, we both thought, wow, as a team, we're better than any of the teams they already have here. So, you know, just in ring, not mentioning vignettes and promos, which I think we excelled at as well. It was just natural. And then, you know, once we got rolling and really developed, you know, we already had our individual personas, but once we developed the addiction persona and we were able to do promos and people were actually able to get invested in their characters, that's when it really took off.
So how much are you looking forward to the match with Chris come April 1st at Supercard of Honor? I mean, you guys are going to step in the ring together and that's going to be a gigantic show for the company during WrestleMania week.
Hey, WrestleMania weekend, it's the first, you know, if you're going to at that show, you're going to see a lot of firsts, you know, the Hardys and Young Bucks first time in TNA. Chris Daniels and myself first time in Ring of Honor. Chris Daniels and myself first time in Ring of Honor. And again, it's Christopher Daniels is one of the best wrestlers in the world. And is a guy that I was lucky enough to be a fan of before I got into the business and became very, very close with when I got in the business and traveled up and down the road with him for the better part of 12, 14 years. And all I ask is for a quality opponent every night, and they don't come any more quality than Chris, and it's going to be a spectacular match. I'm very much looking forward to it. And on a side note, I got a lot to prove. You know, I'm not going to be the guy that's remembered as someone's partner or someone's friend. I'm here to still carve my own niche and to, you know, make my own waves in this industry.
You know, when it comes to a show like that, you talked about this is going to be the first time that you guys have wrestled in a Ring of Honor. How have you guys not met in the ring before, considering the Ring of Honor is about to become 15 years old?
Well, I mean, you know, he spent a lot of time in the early days of Ring of Honor. You know, obviously there as a full-time guy, I only had a, you know, really quick cup of coffee in like 2003 with Ring of Honor, and my time was spent primarily elsewhere. So, you know, we have wrestled countless singles matches around the world, indies, and just is going back to the, you know, late 90s. So it's, the match has happened. It just not happened in Ring of Honor. And it just hasn't happened in the Ring of Honor ring, which again makes it special. And it's, you know, you're not the first person to ask me that question. People are kind of scratching their head going, how can that be when you have two guys like myself and Chris Daniels who have been in the business 19 and 26 years respectively? How has that match not happened? Well, it's just one of those things. It just hasn't. And again, that's another part of what's going to make that weekend, WrestleMania weekend in Lakeland, so special.
So the 15th anniversary show is coming up. What was your initial thoughts of Ring of Honor when you heard that this company was coming together? And what was your initial thoughts about Ring of Honor as a company going forward? And then did you think it was going to make it?
Well, I remember hearing about it, and I was actually the day before the first ever Ring of Honor show, I wrestled for a federation called Phoenix Championship Wrestling in Toms River, New Jersey, which was run by Donnie B, who's Nova's brother. And a lot of the guys from the Ring of Honor card worked on that show. And Donnie B was, you know, he was kind of, his federation was kind of the precursor to Ring of Honor in terms of booking the super show style matches. And I remember, I don't know if I went to the first show just to hang out or one of the first shows, but I remember as soon as they got rolling, I was thinking, wow, this is going to be big. People dig this. People love that main event match on every match, you know, style. And even going back further, I was lucky enough to be on the King of the Indies, the second King of the Indies show, which really was the catalyst for, I think, what Ring of Honor became. I know I've read interviews with Gabe and Rob, and they saw what Roland did in that King of the Indies tournament. And, you know, he had, you think of the names that were there, you had Low Key, Brian Danielson, Spanky, Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, Christopher Daniels, myself, Adam Pearce, Super Dragon, Doug Williams, just Mike Modest, Donovan Morgan, all these top names on one show wrestling each other. And people looked at that and they thought, this is something that we should be doing. And, you know, that style of show is what Ring of Honor adapted, and they were and are very successful going forward with that formula.
When you think back, you're recounting that lineup. That's a ridiculous lineup when you really think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I mean, we knew it was special then. And, you know, a lot of times that was a lot of us met for the first time on that show. I think I might've met AJ once previous to that, but I know it was the first time we really chatted and started to develop, for, you know, what would become a very good friendship. He's one of my best friends at this day. And, you know, Samoa Joe and I had already been very close coming up in SoCal, and Chris Daniels and I, but you know, a lot of these guys I just met, and you know, these are the names that would go on to, again, think of the names I just listed and think of who's kind of been on top of the industry in the last, you know, 5, 7, 8 years. So, it was really cool. And I think people are going to go back and look at that show and just kind of go, wow, this, you know, this one kind of flew under the radar. Like how this show with all these, you know, outstanding, tremendous wrestlers, and, you know, just kind of got lost in indie purgatory back in the day.
You know, when you talk about Ring of Honor and just kind of like, you know, how it's been this, you know, it became kind of like what you said with Jersey All Pro, and even with that show and, you know, Phoenix Championship Wrestling, about, you know, these stacked lineups of these guys. And that's what Ring of Honor has become. You know, so many people talk about the way that ECW shaped the wrestling landscape for that time. Is it fair to say that Ring of Honor has had a similar role when it comes to shaping the landscape of wrestling and to what it's become now when it comes to, you know, you see these stacked cards, you know, with Ring of Honor and with other places as well?
I think so, and I think in a different way. I think ECW, you know, while they had great, great in-ring performers, just the whole attitude of ECW, I think, shaped the business in a different way. You know, of course, with naughty language that we're not allowed to use anymore, and the intense physical style, and just the really risque content and the pushing of the envelope, that was a precursor for what the business would become. And the business became arguably the most successful it's ever been, you know, because of that, or after that. I think Ring of Honor has shifted the attitude of the industry in terms of the great wrestling match and the great two great competitors going out there for 30, 45 minutes and really just putting on a great wrestling contest. I think a lot of independent companies have adapted that. I think even, you know, to some degree, WWE has adapted that. And, you know, not necessarily, you know, the crowd split 100%, you know, 50-50 rather, right down the middle, because whether the good guy or bad guy, the fans just are enamored with both wrestlers and really admire and respect their skill set. So I think the business has really, you know, taken from Ring of Honor in that way. And in the same way that the business, that the industry took from ECW, and, you know, really, really with, you know, whether it be with, you know, a little colorful language, or, you know, the females doing their thing at the time, or, you know, the use of blood and just extreme violence and stuff.
Yeah, it's just incredible to see what Ring of Honor has become, because I think when it started out, people, you know, honestly had a lot of questions about, is it going to be able to stand the test of time? And you look at it now, and it's still there, and it's still running extremely strong. And we're talking about these big events that you got coming up here just within the next few weeks.
It's funny. You just, I don't know if you caught this, but you just started off that sentence with, it's just incredible, and you're talking about ECW. Anyways, yeah, it really is, man. And, you know, I might be in the minority in this thinking, but I kind of like wrestling when it's a little gritty and a little dirty and a little, you know, a little, risque.
Yeah.
You know, I think wrestling, by and large, especially wrestling on television, is far too sanitized and far too neat. And I understand, you know, before people start, you know, crucifying me with, you know, they have to be because of advertisers. And I get that. I 100% get that. But I think that professional wrestling works best when the reins are, you know, dropped and we are allowed to be kind of dirty and risky and unsanitized and unclean. And that's the kind of wrestling I prefer. But that's also, you know, the kind of music I prefer and the
right
kind of politics I prefer too.
Well, I'm with you there, because
just a personal opinion.
I like the honesty that comes with it. I like the emotion that comes with it. And I like the imperfections that come with wrestling. And I think that's what makes it be unique and really stand out as something that it's not always going to be perfect, but we're being honest with the audience.
I couldn't agree more. Exactly. You know, I just don't like being sold the prepackaged, you know, here's our colorful product, and, you know, God forbid somebody drop an F-bomb or somebody throw up a middle finger and not get just lambasted and fired and fined. Like, it's, you know, I just, you know, if I can use a little language, it's, you know, the pussification of society has really trickled down into professional wrestling.
Yeah.
And, in a negative way. And again, in my opinion, you know, I just, and I think the numbers show that too. While there's more wrestling available and more accessible and a lot more people are watching wrestling, not necessarily on a large scale like they were back in the times that we were talking about.
Let's talk about your band then, since you're talking music. Let's talk some, is it Vex Temper? Is that correct?
Vex Temper. That's right. You got it.
Dang right. First single was out on iTunes, and we're taping this on a Monday, and I believe, is your YouTube page starting tonight for your band?
Yeah, that's right. You got it tonight. We rolled out the first single, MPH. The album's done, but I'm rolling out a couple singles before we release the full album. Tonight, just to get some traction on our YouTube page, which will launch tonight, we're actually going to release the song Get Addicted, which is the song that I currently walk out to the ring in Ring of Honor, a song that we wrote, produced, recorded. This is the album version of that. And yeah, I'm just, you know, we're very much grassroots and do it yourself. And when I'm not wrestling, you can rest assured if I'm at home and I'm not spending time with my family, I'm doing something Vex Temper related. I'm kind of the guy that's been designated to do all that, just kind of because I have the experience in pro wrestling and dealing with, you know, social media and setting up interviews and stuff like that. But yeah, we're in full swing, man. I'm very, very proud of the music. That's why I'm working so hard to get it out and let people listen to it and experience it. I think if you like just old school hard rock, a little bit of heavy metal, you'll really like it. And we're literally just waiting on a little bit of artwork to be done, and the full album's ready to roll out. We're going to have it in digital form and physical form. We're booking gigs for this upcoming spring, and just starting to go full bore, man. I'm trying to really fill my schedule up with as much music stuff when I'm not on the road wrestling as I possibly can.
So you guys are on Google Play and Spotify as well, correct?
Yeah, we are. And we're coming to all other outlets soon. It just takes a little bit longer. iTunes, you get on iTunes pretty quick, and Google Play comes next, and Amazon and Spotify. And yeah, we're going to literally be on pretty much every digital outlet you could be on. Like I said, the YouTube song tonight, and then maybe within the next 2 weeks, we're going to release another single on iTunes. And then I would like to say a month, 6 weeks at the latest, the whole album will be out. And it's a rocker, man. And I've gotten a lot of really positive feedback, which is super cool. And I've had to apologize to, those who follow me on social media, because I'm really cramming this down their throats. But hey, man, it's my social media, and that's what I'm going to do. And it's my baby. So I'm going to try to get as many ears on it as possible. And, because anyone that wants, anyone's bitching about not having good quality music out, if you like hard rock and gritty rock and roll, I want you to listen to us, man, and we want to bring it to you.
So when did the band come together, and how long has it taken you to put together the music that you're releasing now?
Okay, well, the band's been together in one way, shape, or form since about 2012, early 2012. We had a lineup change since then. It literally came together as, I've played bass guitar for a long time. And when I moved back to California, I, knew some dudes that I've known for a long time that also played and had been in and out of bands, and I had been in a couple bands, and we really wanted just something, something to have fun with first and foremost, because music is fun. Art should be fun. And, we started writing some original songs. We had some really, really decent stuff, and we got a really good singer who's also a childhood friend of mine, and, started booking some gigs and getting some traction, and, came up with these seven quality songs that we've been working on literally for years, and decided to, let's really make an effort to get this out there. So a lot of these songs, when you hear them, they've been around for the better part of 5, 6, 7 years. But, we spent last September through December really sitting down and recording it. Jake, our lead guitarist, mixed it. We just had it mastered about 3 weeks ago. Very, very happy with the finished product. And it's a great mix of stuff. Like the song that you're going to hear tonight, if you go to our YouTube page, Vex Temper, Get Addicted, is the song that I walk out to, and it's a quick little 3-minute, and I guess it would be our most accessible song in terms of, a broad audience. But then we got other songs on the album that are 8, 9, and 10 minutes long, which I know isn't for everyone, but we all love that. We basically write and play the music that we listen to and that we want to hear. And good crunchy guitars, killer drum solo in one of the songs, just a little bit of everything, man. It's very much old school hard rock music that, that I hope everyone's going to like.
Yeah. And when it comes to style and even music being that long, that's old school Metallica right there.
Sure, it is, and it's, a lot of tempo changes and time changes and halftime feel. And yeah, there's one of our songs that I'm very, very happy with called I Desert, which is almost 10 minutes, and it's a journey. Songs that take you on a journey and that you feel like you're with the lyricist or you're with the guitarist as they're going on this journey. I think that's super cool. And it's something that's, missing. I mean, I know there's still a lot of hard rock and metal acts that do that, but, let's be honest, that music is not very accessible.
No.
We're in 2017 and people are listening to different stuff. Again, going back to, over-polished, overproduced, packaged, plastic, bubblegum music. Same like some professional wrestling is presented. Yeah, this is completely opposite. It's gritty, it's raw, and I'm from the school of thought of, I like music when it sounds like human beings made it, I don't mind hearing, a bad note or a vocal flub. If it's people out there creating and having fun, give it to me. I don't care. That's why I like going to live shows. You're not going to see a live show that's perfect. Nobody wants a live show that's perfect. You want those little snafus. It's rock and roll, man. That's what makes rock and roll rock and roll.
So when's the world tour coming?
The world tour is going to have to wait because I have this other gig that's called professional wrestling that And all the guys in the band are, we're all working class guys. You know, these are all hardworking family men who happen to be very, very talented musicians and love what they do. However, having said that, if, something comes up gig wise that we could do a quick romp up and down, California or around where we're all located, of course we're going to take it. And, the sky's the limit. That's the great thing, is there's no expectations, but there's a ton of expectations. It's all, whatever happens, we're going to take it in stride, man.
I know that you play bass with the band, but at the same time, is there any chance that Vex Temper could be playing you out for your match against Christopher Daniels come April 1st?
You never know. I don't know about that one, but that's a possibility. If we Ring of Honor gets out closer to, where we're located here in Southern California, you never know. You might get to see us, me included, play me out to the ring, put down the bass guitar, get in the ring and go.
I like it. So I mentioned Metallica. Do you have tickets already for how many shows for the world tour?
Well, I got them for two shows. I got the early pre-sale. I got tickets ordered 4 days before they went on sale to the general public. And I ordered simply just to cover my ass, because my schedule is what it is. And sometimes I don't know my schedule that far out.
Yeah.
I did some questioning to see if the dates were open, and I got the thumbs up that the dates were open. So I ordered tickets for the Rose Bowl in Pasadena and for Petco Park in San Diego.
Nice.
About a half an hour. And these aren't cheap tickets either. So, and about a half an hour after I ordered the tickets for the Rose Bowl, I got a text message telling me that I have television tapings on that day. So I am definitely going to one show in San Diego. I might try to catch another one when I'm on the road somewhere. And I'm going to have a ticket for sale on StubHub for the Pasadena show. So and that's not the first time that's happened to me. The same thing happened to me with the Big Four show in New York. I had ordered some great tickets for that, and the company I was wrestling at the time added television taping, so I had to get rid of it. But I'm definitely going to one. Like I said, if I can catch another one while I'm on the road, I'll definitely do that too.
Well, there's no shows down here in Orlando the time that you're down here or in the Central Florida area. July 5th is when we're getting Metallica here.
Is that at the Orange Bowl, or where are they playing there?
They're playing, that's Camping World Stadium, a.k.a. the Citrus Bowl here in Orlando. And then they're down in, they're in Miami on July 7th. And then they're doing Atlanta July 9th.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, I was a little, not surprised, but I thought they would roll out in arenas first, but they went for stadiums, which is great, because, I've seen them in the LA Coliseum out here twice, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
And they did the Summer Sanitarium shows in like 2000 and 2003 or whatever it was. And it's going to be cool to see them in a stadium again, man. Just, again, you don't get to see a big rock act in a stadium much anymore. Unless it's who sells stadiums anymore? Guns N' Roses, I saw them last year, it was great. AC/DC, and then other than that, you got U2 and those type of people selling out stadiums. Bon Jovi, maybe, but I'd be hard pressed to find another hard rock / metal act selling out stadiums.
Did you go to the stadium shows? It was about 20 years ago at Metallica. It was Metallica, Guns N' Roses, and Faith No More.
I did not. That was I was a little bit too young. That was like 92, I want to say 91, because that they were supporting the Black Album,
something
my
like that.
Yeah. At the time, yeah, my sister at the time went. They lived in Arizona, and they said it was awesome. And yeah, I was still in maybe freshman in high school or something. And I would have loved to. But as a broke freshman with no transportation, there's no way I was going to that. But yeah, just to see those two bands at that point, would have been incredible. And I'm envious of anyone that did.
Oh, I went to that show. I think I was just out of high school, which shows that I'm an old man now. But I remember going to that show. I always described it as I was the one person that didn't wear a black t-shirt.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that, man. Yeah, Guns N' Roses was, they were my gateway band into hard rock and metal. That was my first band that I really, really just became obsessed with. So I always said, if they do a tour, I don't care where I'm going, I have to see them. I owe it to myself to see them. And I was lucky enough to see them in San Diego last year. And God, what a show they put on. You know, so very much so impressed.
Me too.
After all the years and all the rumors, you know.
I saw them last year as well, and I didn't know what to expect because you're always thinking, you know, older, can they really hit the notes and everything like that? And I was blown away how good Axl was. I mean, he hit every single note that you could imagine. I mean, it sounded like, you know, like they were in their prime back in the day.
Yeah, I agreed, man. And, you know, Axl was, you know, doing wind sprints across the stage. He was running around like it was the Paradise City video. You know,
yeah.
The same, like it was 1987 again. And Slash, you know, he always hits a home run, but just everybody, just the energy. And like you said, Axl was just on. They started on time, and it was just, I was so pleasantly surprised. I mean, before I went, I had been reading that the shows were just incredible. But to see it for myself, and it was just a really cool, that's what's awesome about music, you know, like you, all these years being a Guns N' Roses fan since I was 11 years old, 10 years old, and finally seeing them, you know, into my late 30s and just being brought back to when I first remembered, you know, opening up the album and looking at the liner notes and just that place that music takes you to, man. That's why I'm so in love with music, just because of what it can do to us emotionally. Not to get too deep here on a wrestling show, but you know, it's just, you know, there's nothing else that you can do that'll do that. That'll get that type of emotion out of you, like music that you have a close attachment to.
Well, I would think that's a great example from a standpoint of music and wrestling. You want to get yourself in a certain state of mind and you want to get emotional about it. And music can do that to you. I think wrestling can do that to you when you are a performer. And then on top of that, it's a great release for you creatively when you're not in that wrestling ring and your mind is still going. And you don't want to be wrestling, you know, 24/7 necessarily.
Sure.
And, you know, now you've got this other outlet when it comes to music that you can, you know, release on.
Absolutely. You know, and I like to think that I'm a fairly creative person and I'm an artist, and it just gives me, I have to always be doing something. I have to, you know, be creating, or I feel unless I'm doing something, I don't feel ambitious, and then I start to really get down on myself. So I really like to just be doing something. And if that something is something creative, you know, that's just extra frosting on the cake. And yeah, like you said, wrestling does that same thing. For me growing up, I watched strictly WWF in the 80s. So, you know, if I can go back and watch a Saturday Night's Main Event, I'm that 10-year-old kid sitting Indian style in front of a television, watching, you know, Hulk Hogan versus Kamala, and it brings me right back. And, you know, it kind of makes me fall in love with wrestling again, because as a performer, you have a tendency to get jaded and, you know, almost take things for granted. But then I watch an old, you know, I watch WrestleMania 3 or 4 and just think, wow, I remember dreaming to do this as a kid and I'm doing it now. And it's a pretty cool thing, man. If I, you know, step outside myself and look at it from that perspective.
As someone who is the same age as Tom Brady, and you guys are both involved in physical sports, what were your thoughts about what Brady did this past season with the Patriots?
Unbelievable. I mean, you know, I went through a period being a Los Angeles Rams fan, former St. Louis Rams fan, where I despised the Patriots because, you know, they won their first one by beating the Rams, and that did not sit too well with me. But, you know, as I've grown up and matured, I've really, really learned to respect what the Patriots do and just the brilliance of, you know, of Belichick in particular, and just the way he's able to just plug guys in and just continue being successful. I mean, it started with Brady, you know, when you consider that Bledsoe went down with the injury and Tom Brady came in and a dynasty was born. And he's done that, you know, year after year after year. They won the Super Bowl without Gronk. And people probably thought that was going to be a huge void. And it was a non-factor. And Brady's he's the greatest quarterback I've seen. I think he's going to go down as the greatest quarterback of all time. You know, definitely in the conversation. And it's just been fun to watch. And I almost find myself kind of rooting for him just because they became such heels. And,
yeah,
you know, and everybody was out for him, even, you know, including Roger Goodell. And it almost made me, like, you know, kind of root for him just to see that, you know, to see Goodell handing him the trophy. That had to be so satisfying to those guys, you know, especially Robert Kraft and Belichick, and And yeah, and Brady's just, he's a phenom, man. He's a, you know, I can't wait to tell my son about, you know, how I watched him from day one and, you know, followed his career and saw, you know, the greatest quarterback that ever played play the game.
So now that you have football back in L.A., you actually have two teams. Are you an L.A. Rams fan again?
Oh, man. I mean, I stuck with the Rams through thick and thin, and there's been a lot of thin. you know, I'm happy to have them back. Very, very underwhelming season. I'm glad that Jeff Fisher is gone. Hopefully things are looking up. We had such promising teams and such a young, good team and a great defense last season. I don't know what happened this year and, you know, really underwhelming season by Gurley, but
they gave up on Fisher, man.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I'm trying to remain optimistic about it.
Well, it all depends on your quarterback.
Yeah, well, it depends on which ones we decide to go with.
Right.
The Rams have a problem with, you know, picking a path and committing. You know, if they would have went with Goff all season, I think things could have been different. But, you know, I'm an armchair, you know, Sunday morning guy, so what do I know? The Chargers being here, that's really just kind of really diluted me. You know, it's like all of a sudden we have two teams and one of them's the Chargers. It's neither here nor there.
Well, I would think with Los Angeles, it's already kind of a fair weather city to some extent. And now it's going to be, you've got to have a winner. You've already got the Rams out there. And you know what? They were cool, I think, when they first started. But when, you know, when they're not playing well, it's just like, we've got other things to do here in LA. And then now you got a second team that's never even been there in the Chargers. Yeah. That's going to have no allegiances. And there's going to be people in San Diego that are like, I'm pissed. They're dead to me. I'm not going to LA to go see them. I'm not going to support them. I don't know how they're going to do there.
A lot of people feel just like you said, and I love Los Angeles, and California is my home, and I'm a California guy. But to be honest, Los Angeles could be a very fickle city, you know. And I think in terms of team loyalty, you got the Dodgers and you got the Lakers, and everything else, you know, is just kind of falls by the wayside after that. So unless the Rams can start consistently doing well. And I'm talking playoff well, or, you know, even get to a Super Bowl, you know, the city's going to turn their backs on them pretty quickly. Cause like you said, it's Los Angeles. It's not like this is, you know, North Carolina, with no disrespect to North Carolina. It's a beautiful state, but there's a lot of stuff to do, you know, within the state and within the city of Los Angeles, other than watch a football game.
Are you a Lakers guy, a Clippers guy, or a Warriors guy?
I'm a Lakers guy kind of by default. I'm not a huge basketball guy much anymore. Mm. I follow it from a distance at best. You know, I grew up in the era of
Showtime, man.
Showtime. Yeah, absolutely. Grew up in the era of that and, you know, Magic and Kareem and James Worthy and just, you know, just those awesome teams. And again, for me, you know, that era of basketball, while today's players are, you know, just incredible athletes, that's I think going to be looked at as the golden era for basketball. I mean, what would that, you know, 80s, 90s period was just awesome. So, I follow from a distance. I don't follow. I can't say I follow closely, but if, you know, gun to the head, the Lakers would be my team based on location and based on, you know, this stupid fan loyalty that I have.
Well, good for you. Cause I'm a Lakers guy. And like right next to me, right, I literally have a team poster of the 86-87 world champion Lakers.
Yeah.
Which, yep, I found semi crumpled up in a garage sale years ago and was able to get most of the creases out. And I was like, I'm keeping that, man. It's like $2 bucks at a garage sale. It's like that's a piece of history right there.
Yeah. What a squad. I mean, you know, those guys I mentioned and Byron Scott and, you know, AC Green with the Jerry Curl and God, it was just, you know,
Mike Schmeck.
Riley is. Yeah. Yep. Yep. You know, it was awesome. You know, it was, they really fit that LA vibe too. You know, it was just so cool. I remember being a kid and just thinking all those players were so cool. You know, just all the personalities. It's, you know, that I think that's missing a little bit too. You know, just that all those positive personalities. You know,
yeah,
on one team.
So for you now, 19 years, almost 20 in the business. Yeah. What's the secret to staying in the business for nearly two decades?
You know, learning, and just learning how to change with the times and to adapt, you know, adapt your physical style in the ring and adapt your mental approach to matches. And, you know, one thing I very, very proud of is being able to stay relevant for as long as I have. It's challenging to do in pro wrestling. I started with TNA in 2003, and I've maintained to keep my name out there for the better part of, the last 16 years. So I'm very, very proud of that. But to answer your question, like I said, you have to be very, very smart in how you approach things. The business has changed, from an in-ring perspective, whether people like that or not, it's changed. It's definitely more physical. It's definitely, there's a lot more risks taken. You have to either change with the times or, get left behind. I like to think that I'm a guy that go out there and have a quality match with anybody, whether it's a tremendous high flyer or a hulking 300-pound extreme guy. You just have to be smart on how you approach things, and you have to be a good businessman. And that's the one thing that I think took me a little bit longer to learn. The physical aspect of pro wrestling always came very natural to me, but the business of professional wrestling was a little difficult for me to grasp, because I never wanted this to be a business. I wanted it to just be fun. But at the end of the day, it is a business, and we are our own commodity. And, if you can get your ducks in a row, as a wrestler and as a businessman, you can have a decent career. It's just getting harder and harder to sustain it.
And that goes back to what you talked about at the beginning when it comes to, you've got to be selfish in this business at times.
Sure. Yeah. And admittedly, I'm a very, very giving person, and just in terms of putting a match together or ideas, and or just how my character would be booked, or I've known a lot of guys who have been very successful who have been dicks, for lack of a better word, or who have been very selfish.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I can still hang my head high and look at myself in the mirror and not have any regrets for really, treating somebody bad to get, myself over, or, stepping over someone. I've always been very helpful and very giving, and, I'd like to think I'm very, even keeled and level headed, and I'm very, very proud of that. But, like we said, this is a self-serving business, and sometimes you just have to step up and look out for number one. And, I'm trying to balance that with still being, a quote unquote good person, which that's up for debate too, depending on who you talk to.
Last thing, you talked about, you gotta keep up with the time. So, and you talked about, the physical style that's in the ring now. So how do you balance that from a standpoint of the physicality and all the moves that are going on and everything? But at the same time, trying to mix in the psychology, especially for somebody that, has been in wrestling for almost 20 years now.
Well, psychology to me always comes first. The moves, there's a million guys who could do a million cool moves nowadays, but when to do them, where to do them, why to do them are more important than the actual moves themselves. So psychology always comes first for me. And that's something, again, that I've had to learn, over the course of my career. That's my approach. I know what I do. I know what I do well. It's my job to find out what the other guy does well and accentuate all of that and accentuate what I do well and to go from there. And it's just it's a very cerebral approach anymore. I've gone through my phase of trying to do the coolest move. And I've certainly, if you look back at my career, I kind of got lumped into being a cruiserweight style guy, and I never necessarily was. I think my style was unique, but I was never just a high flyer. You go look back at tapes and see me doing death defying things off of Ultimate X structures and all types of stuff. Yes, I'm a risk taker, but I wasn't never necessarily a cruiserweight style guy. I just kind of, maybe the X division, being surrounded by that kind of put me in that group. So, but what it did is it got me used to wrestling very, very athletic style and very, very talented guys. And that was a good basis for my career going forward.
Do you like that terminology of cruiserweight? Because I know that, it comes and it goes, but I'm always worried that pigeonholes guys too much.
I agree. I, I, um, I'm happy that cruiserweights, quote unquote, are getting a, you know, a bigger platform via the 205 Live or whatever tournaments they're doing these days. I'm not keen on everything, but the one thing I always thought was made wrestling cool and set it apart was, you know, in boxing you had, you know, bantamweights, featherweights, you know, super middleweights, lightweights, light heavyweights, and heavyweights. You know, so those guys only boxed each other, only fought each other. In wrestling, I thought it was cool that you could see a Rey Mysterio wrestle an Undertaker. You know, and I kind of don't like just all guys that look and wrestle the same wrestling each other. I like mixing it up. And again, I think that's what makes wrestling stand out. And why we're going away from that, I don't know. And I think it does dilute it when you put all of the guys that wrestle that style on one show. You know, I think I like wrestling being a variety show. And when you take some of that spice out and some of that variety out, it dilutes the recipe.
Well, let's get all the plugs in. So Ring of Honor is at the Hammerstein Ballroom in New York City Saturday night.
Yes, it is.
15th. Yes, 15th anniversary show coming up Friday, March 15th. That's live on pay-per-view. Supercard of Honor Saturday, April 1st in Lakeland, where you will face your former partner, Christopher Daniels. Everybody can follow you on Twitter. It's at Frankie Kazarian. And definitely keep up there so you can find out more about your band, Vex Temper. Everybody can get the first single. It's on iTunes, plus the YouTube page is starting here on Monday night. So everybody can check it out then and be looking to more singles dropping here in the near future.
Yeah, man. Yeah, thanks for plugging that. Yeah, I'm Frankie Kazarian on Twitter and Instagram, and my band is Vex Temper, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And yeah, I'm really, like I said, I apologize in advance, but I'm cramming this down everyone's throats. And I love and appreciate the feedback, and thank you guys for just taking a listen, even if it's not your style of music or your cup of Java, you know, just give it a chance and give it a listen. I appreciate that, and I appreciate all the support, man, and it's good to talk to you again. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while. So I think the last time that we actually got to speak with each other was before Ring of Honor show, before WrestleMania last year in Dallas.
That's right. Yep, that's right. Yeah, that was, you were backstage at the... We're in that hall. That's right. We got to chat a little bit. So that was cool.
Yeah, that was great. So, hey, thanks for the time, man. I appreciate it. And keep up the great work.
My pleasure. Appreciate it. Anytime.
Reminder to everybody, please subscribe to the Between the Ropes podcast. You can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and on the TuneIn app. You can also find it on SoundCloud as well. Rate and review the podcast. That helps us get more attention and climb up those charts. And we want your help with that. Give us 5 stars, give us 6 stars, give us as many stars as you can humanly do. And also, please support Between the Ropes on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/Between the Ropes. Anything that you feel comfortable with contributing to the Between the Ropes Patreon account helps us keep doing what we're doing and even do more things. So you can find that at patreon.com/Between the Ropes. Michael and I will be back later in the week for the weekly Between the Ropes podcast, talking about the latest news and notes, and there is going to be a lot of that, especially when it comes to Impact Wrestling. Plus, we will preview the WWE Fastlane pay-per-view. So keep it tuned here to the Between the Ropes podcast. Talk to you next time right here, Between the Ropes.